turning the dirt over and not looking up at me.
"Spring's coming," she said finally.
I nodded.
"Your Uncle Earl's staying here now."
She wiped her hands on a rag and took a cigarette out of her overalls, leaned back against the table of flats, and lit it.
"He took a room downtown with that little girl he brought to the funeral. But that looks like one of his shorter romances, 'cause she's still downtown. Man's living out of 2 suitcases and sleeping on the couch. Won't move into my spare room. Keep saying he ain't gonna be here that long."
I loosened my jacket. When I spoke, my voice was as flat and careless as hers. "Mama always said Earl lived from woman to woman. Told Daddy Glenn that Earl had become a cradle robber, that there was nothing solid left in his life but whiskey and family." I paused, surprised to hear myself mention Daddy Glenn. It felt suddenly hot on the porch.
"Well, I told him he should get himself a widow next time. Some fat old girl to iron his shirts and wash his back. But Earl likes them young. Likes them open-mouthed and gawky. He's like all men, I suppose. Loves a grateful woman. Especially one that he don't have to do nothing to impress. And the girls he finds, my lord, it about hurts my heart. These little strays he brings around. All Earl has to do is speak gently to them, and they fall all over him. They're just like fruit in the sun, heavy and ripe for someone to pick."
I squirmed a little on my stool. "Uncle Earl told me he's sure there ain't no woman ever regretted giving herself to him."
"Christ, Lord, you love him just like one of them, don't you?"
Aunt Raylene frowned at me.
"You don't think it's cruel, the way he takes up with these children? He's never divorced a one of them. Never stays with any of them more than a few months. God knows how many babies he's planted."
"None." I bit my lip.
"You know that, do you?"
"He told me he took care not to make children anymore. Said he didn't think he had no business making any more babies than he had already."
"Well, isn't he thoughtful?"
Aunt Raylene ground out the stub of her cigarette on the side of one of the flats. She walked over near me and picked up one of the glass window frames leaning against the wall. Carrying it back, she set it down so that it covered 2 of her flats. 2 more windows completed the task, leaving the mix to heat in the sun. She didn't look at me, and her lips were set in a thin, straight line. I knew that meant she was mad at me.
"He only marries them 'cause they want it so bad."
My eyes stung, as if the tears I had refused to shed on the long walk out were burning me now. My hands balled up into fists.
"He loves them," I yelled. "He loves them more than they deserve." "Bone?"
Aunt Raylene turned to me and shook her head.
"Girl, you are seriously confused about love. Seriously."
"Oh?" I drawled at her sarcastically and rocked to my feet.
"And whose fault is that, huh? How am I supposed to know anything about love anyway? How am I supposed to know anything at all? I'm just another ignorant boat rat, you know. Another piece of trash barely knows enough to wipe her ass or spit away from the wind. Just like you and Mama and Alma and everybody."
I spit to the side deliberately.
"Hell,"
I said softly to her face.
"Hellfire.
We ain't like nobody else in the world." Her dark eyes glittered at me, but I wasn't afraid. My insides were boiling and my skin burned. My hatred and rage were so hot, I felt like I could have spit fire. When she put her hand on my wrist, I felt the hairs on my forearm tingle and stand up. A cold electric current ran up to the back of my neck. "People are the same," she said in a whisper. "Everybody just does the best they can." I took a long breath and let it out in a rush of bitter words.
"Other people don't go beating on each other all the time," I told her. "They don't get fallen down drunk, shoot each other, and then laugh about it. They don't pick up and leave their husbands in the middle of the night and then never explain. They don't move out alone to the edge of town without a husband or children or even a good friend, run around all the time in overalls and sell junk by the side of the road."
Aunt Raylene crossed her arms over her breasts and looked at me.
"I don't like being yelled at. Never have."
Her hands gripped her upper arms so tightly I saw the fingers tremble.
"And I don't know about other people, but I've always believed everybody does what they have to do in this life.
She stopped and started again.
When you're 30 years old and supporting your own children and doing the best you can when you don't know where your next dollar is coming from, then you can yell at me. Maybe.
She shook her head and turned away, brushing loose dirt off her thighs.
It's almost supper time, she told me, and you're filthy. You go get yourself cleaned up and I'll see whether I feel like feeding you or not. You don't have to feed me.
I couldn't look at her and say it. My head dropped down, and I wiped my nose on my sleeve.
I know what I have to do and what I don't. You think about it, and you'll see that the biggest part of why I live the way I do is that out here I can do just about anything I damn well please.
I looked up at her hesitantly. Aunt Raylene's face was beet red, and her eyes were not on me. They were looking out past the highway. She seemed like she wanted to cry almost as much as I did, but like me, wasn't going to let herself.
I said, go wash yourself.
I went. The stories I made up for myself changed. In the half-sleep that preceded full sleep, I began to imagine the highway that went north. No real road. This highway was shadowed by tall grass and ancient trees. Moss hung low, and tiny birds with gray-blue wings darted from the road's edge to the trees. Cars passed at a roar, but did not stop, and the North Star shone above their headlights like a beacon. I walked that road alone, my legs swinging easily as I covered the miles. No one stopped. No one called to me. Only the star guided me, and I was not sure where I would end. I stayed at Raylene's for 3 days, and then Mama called to say I either had to come back or start school out there. I'd heard about the country school from Garvey years before, and I knew I would hate it. They didn't even have a library. Reluctantly, I went back to the apartment over the fish market. Mama bought me a new pair of sneakers to replace the ones I had worn out, but said nothing about me running off in the first place. Several times I caught her watching me with a painful, concentrated expression, but I didn't ask her what she was thinking. Reese told me that she had been crazy angry when I turned up gone, and was ready to call the police when Aunt Raylene called. They talked about you a long time, she said. Aunt Raylene told Mama to let you get it out of your system, and Mama told Aunt Raylene to mind her own business. I thought they were going to yell at each other like they used to, but Mama just gave in. She said she didn't know what to do with you, didn't know what to do with nobody, and Raylene could keep you if you wanted to stay. Reese grinned at me almost sweetly. I didn't think you'd come back at all. I was all ready to take over your side of the bed for good. Reese's biggest complaint was that she was in the middle, and Mama and I were both restless sleepers. I wouldn't want Mama to be mad at me the way she's been mad at you, she added. I don't see how you can stand it. I didn't either. It felt as if the world was falling apart in slow motion. 2 days after I came back, Aunt Alma's baby girl finally died, her heart stopping the way everyone had been expecting since she was born. Faye called Mama to tell her, and Raylene came to stay with Reese and me while Mama went out to see Alma.
You've always been the one closest to her, Raylene told Mama, and she's not handling this very well at all. You'd think we hadn't all known it was coming.
You know how Alma loved Annie, Mama said. Maybe she knew Annie was going to die, and maybe she didn't. But she wanted her baby girl to live.
I heard her from inside the apartment, even though she was already out on the landing.
Her voice was pitched low, but the words sounded so intense, I came to the door. I watched Mama go down the stairs while Reese led Raylene inside to see how well she'd done her paint-by-numbers clown face.
Once Granny had told me how Mama carried me down to the courthouse after I was born, and fought with the man there about the way they had made out my birth certificate.
Telling me that story, Granny's eyes had glittered, and her mouth had turned up in a fierce smile.
You don't know how your Mama loves you, she had said. You can't even imagine.
Like Alma loved Annie, maybe. Like Ruth loved her sons D.W. and Dwight and Tommy Lee. So much that she made Travis swear not to bury her until they got home. I chewed on a fingernail and watched Mama walk away. wondering if she still loved me, and what I would do when we went back to Daddy Glen. Raylene had brought some of her home canned blackberries with her. She and Reese made a skillet cobbler the way Raylene said she had learned when she was with the carnival. She dropped lots of little butter slices on the bottom of the skillet, sprinkled brown sugar over that, then poured her blackberries, more butter, and a handful of white sugar over everything. Unsweetened biscuit dough made the top crust, and the cobbler was ready to eat in half an hour. It wasn't as good as Aunt Fay's pies, but Reese gorged on it, eating almost half the pan by herself. Afterwards, she leaned forward lazily on the table, almost asleep, her blue-stained lips slightly parted. Aunt Raylene looked through the paintings and picked up the Japanese mountain scene I had not bothered to finish. She waved it at me.
"Reese tells me you won't give this to her, even though you don't want to finish it."
"It's mine. I might finish it sometime."
"Uh-huh."
Raylene put the cardboard drawing back. I waited for her to say something more, but she turned away and started cleaning up the kitchen. It was still early. I went out on the landing to watch the cars pass by, people from the nearby housing development on their way out to the new discount grocery, a few trucks with men coming home late from work, a bus from Bushy Creek Baptist with flat-faced children pressed against the windows staring at me hatefully. I glared back at them. Anger was like a steady drip of poison into my soul, teaching me to hate the ones that hated me. "Who do they think they are?" I whispered to myself. "They piss honey, shit morning glory blossoms, sit on their porches every Sunday morning and look down on the world with contempt. I hate them," I told Aunt Raylene when she came up behind me, waving at the bus as it passed. "Looking at us like we're something nasty." Aunt Raylene was picking blackberry seeds out of her teeth, looking off into the distance, and she surprised me when she reached over and slapped my shoulder.
"They look at you the way you look at them," she told me bluntly. "You don't know who those children are. Maybe they're nasty and silly and hateful. Maybe not. You don't know what happens to them when they go home. You don't know their daddies or mamas, who their people are, why they do things, or what they're scared of. You think because they wear different clothes than you and go by so fast, they're rich and cruel and thinking terrible things about you. Could be they're looking at you sitting up here eating blackberries and looking at them like they're spit on a stove. Could be they're jealous of you, hungry for what you got, afraid of what you would do if they ever stepped in the yard."
She reached down and pulled her string bag from her pocket and began to roll a cigarette.
"You're making up stories about those people. Make up a story where you have to live in their house, be one of their family, and pass by this road. Look at it from the other side for a while. Maybe you won't be glaring at people so much."
I looked up at her sourly. "People say you ran off to the carnival with a man, but you never say nothing about him. How come he didn't marry you?" The paper in Aunt Raylene's hands shook.
"People say? People will say anything. I ran off to the carnival, yeah, but not for no man, for myself. And I ain't never wanted to marry nobody. I like my life the way it is, little girl. I made my life. The same way it looks like you're gonna make yours. Out of pride and stubbornness and too much anger. You better think hard, Ruth Ann, about what you want and who you're mad at. You better think hard."
She licked the cigarette paper and smoothed it closed. She lit it and tucked the dead match back in her pocket. She smoked carefully, watching me as if she expected me to talk back to her. But I held still. When she finally spoke again, her voice shook a little.
"It's not so cold tonight. Not so cold. Smell of spring in the air."
I turned my face away and said nothing. After a minute, Raylene shrugged and went back inside. I squatted down and hugged myself until I was as small as I could get, watching the cars pass and listening to Reese fuss as Aunt Raylene took her off to bed. I closed my eyes and tried to make up a story for myself. I pretended we were back in that house over in West Greenville that Mama had loved so, pretended that Daddy Glenn had joined the Pentecostal church and gotten a cross-country trucking job that would pay him lots of money but keep him away from home. I imagined Mama getting a job where she could sit down all she wanted, where the money was good, and she never got any burns or had to pull her hair back so tight off her face that she got headaches. Maybe she could be a teacher, or one of those women behind the makeup counter at the Jordan Marsh. I bit my lips and let it all play out under my eyelids. Reese in a new dress for Easter, me with all the books I wanted to read, Mama sitting in the sun with her feet up, Daddy Glenn far away, and coming home only often enough to make Mama smile. I fell asleep there dreaming, loving the dream. Chapter 19. That spring, the storms were astonishing. Torrents of water that sheeted down and flooded everything from the sagging old houses on Henderson Road to the warehouses and cafes out on Whitehorse Road. But the day Aunt Alma went crazy, it was perfectly clear. Hot and dry with the mud standing up in stiff peaks and ruts off every driveway. It was Monday, the day Reese had gone over to Faye and Neville's when she got out of school to go shopping with their girls.
"She's almost nine," Faye had told Mama. "She's old enough. Can't be too protective, you know."
After Reese drove her crazy begging, Mama agreed reluctantly. I was walking home slowly, trying to keep my skirt from blowing up in the wind, and thinking about the luxury of an hour or two before Reese would get home. A solid piece of time when I would be able to lie around on the couch, listen to the radio, drink Coca-Cola, and read the paperback of The Group I had finally managed to sneak out of the library. Walking up past Woolworth's in the fresh spring breeze, I was carrying my shoes and tugging at my hem when I saw Mama running down the stairs from the apartment. She was still wearing her hairnet and flat white shoes, so she couldn't have been home very long. From the way she was moving, something had to be wrong, so I picked up and ran, reaching the car just as she did. Even so, she had the Pontiac engine roaring by the time I grabbed the door handle. I jumped in and threw my books in the back seat before she could stop me. But I was still surprised when she didn't tell me to get out. Just gunned the engine so that the wheels spun as we pulled out onto the highway. "It's your Aunt Alma," she said. "Little Earl called. Sounded terrible. Couldn't even get out what had happened, so don't ask." Mama looked stern, scared, and angry at the same time. I wondered what was wrong. If it was something Uncle Wade had done, or maybe one of the cousins. It could be anything with the way Aunt Alma had been since Annie died. "Don't we just lead charmed lives?" Aunt Alma had said the last time we saw her. "Bad things seem to be happening all the time." I concentrated on gripping the door handle while Mama roared out toward the West Greenville Highway. She took the old Henderson Road turn off, past the gas station where Uncle Wade had been working before his accident, and turned onto the dirt road that cut through open country where the interstate was supposed to go in next year. Aunt Alma had gotten a deal on one of the condemned farmhouses out there and had moved in after Ruth died. Little Earl was waiting for us beside the cow grate down near the mailbox, his face white and his shirt streaked with muddy brown stains. There was snot all over his upper lip, and he kept wiping his hands down over his middle where the worst of the mud had smeared. Mama didn't get out of the car, just stopped for a minute and leaned out the window. "You all right?" she yelled, and he nodded. "He sure didn't look all right to me." "She's up at the house," he whispered, as if he were afraid to talk too loud. I tried, but she wouldn't let me do nothing." He hugged his shoulders tightly. "She's up there by herself. I got the girls away and called you." There was a pause as he gulped air between every few words. "And then Uncle Earl said not to go back in any way. She scared me. Mama scared me." He stopped and looked back up the dirt drive that wound to the side and disappeared into the pines. "Oh God, Auntie, she's gone crazy as a milk cow, just like Daddy said she would."
"Wipe your face and keep quiet," Mama told him fiercely. "I'll send Bone down for you in a little while, and I don't want you scaring your sisters. You wash your face and get some of that dirt off yourself."
She sounded almost hateful, a way I had never heard her talk before to any child. I turned from watching Little Earl to look at her, and almost rolled across the seat when she started the Pontiac racing up the drive again. Behind us, I heard another engine, and looked over my shoulder to see Uncle Earl's flatbed truck trailing a cloud of red dust, a rattle of tools bouncing around. He yelled something, but Mama didn't stop, just sped into Aunt Alma's yard and nearly knocked over her garden barrels before killing the engine and jumping out of the car. I pushed over to the driver's side to follow right behind her, but Mama yelled at me to stay there, without even turning around. I froze where I was while she ran toward the porch and Aunt Alma's hunched, still figure. Chickens were screeching and running away. Dust was settling behind the Pontiac, but everything else was dead still. I could see a row of white faces watching from Aunt Alma's chicken wire garden fence. Patsy Ruth, Reese, and Faye's girls, Grace and Maddie. The sun was pouring down, hot and steamy, and there were puddles under the black walnut tree that hadn't had a chance to dry up. There was no sign of Uncle Wade or his truck, and everything looked strangely peaceful. Then I saw that all Aunt Alma's flower baskets were lying in the yard, buds and herbs scattered. Near one of the baskets was the porcelain wringer off her old washing machine, and the lumps in the dust and mud seemed to be clothing. The sound of Mama's voice drifted over to me, a lulling murmur of softly accented phrases that reminded me of the way Aunt Alma had always talked to baby Annie. Aunt Alma was quiet, bent over, and didn't respond as Mama wrapped her arms around her and whispered reassuring nonsense. I opened the car door on my side quietly and stepped out. There was a fork under my foot. The tines buried in the ground. Flatware was scattered everywhere, and an egg turner stuck up out of a broken flower pot. I stepped over a smashed plate and saw dozens of spools of thread under the porch and a pair of pliers under the Pontiac's right front tire. Dust was on everything, making it hard to see what was what until I looked closely. Just past the fender, a little breeze lifted a tangle of red-brown curly hair from the hairbrush that lay near a shattered hand mirror. I bent over and saw a stack of faded pictures half buried under the crushed petals of black-eyed Susans and a smear of baby's breath. The fan-shaped wedge beside them looked like the Venetian blinds that Aunt Alma had always hung in her bathroom. "Honey, sweet girl, it's all right," Mama was saying. I looked over at them. Aunt Alma's feet were resting on a little pile of chopped black slats, 45 RPM record fragments, and her pale stockings had slid down over her broken-at-the-heel brown shoes. There was mud on her calves and knees, plainly visible where her yellow flower-print dress was pulled up. A strip of the hem on her white cotton slip hung down behind her knees. The sleeves of her faded blue sweater were rolled back, and it was all covered with dried mud like the dress. Her hands were as dirty as the rest of her, stained dark, her nails broken and the cuticles torn. Blood, I realized. That was blood among the mud stains all over Aunt Alma's hands, dress, sweater, calves, and face. Her hair was matted with it. A chill went through me, and the skin on top of my head went tingly and hot. Aunt Alma's fingers were knotted together in her lap, her face pointed straight ahead, but her eyes were completely unfocused, looking inside, not out. She opened her hands slowly and brought them up to her face, the torn, raw fingers sliding past her cheekbones to push her hair back, spreading fresh blood on her temples. There were cuts on her forearms, one on her left cheek, and another on her neck below her chin. My mouth hung open. I turned my head. There was glass everywhere, shattered, scattered, gleaming in the sun. I was standing barefoot in a yard of broken glass. "He'll be back soon," Aunt Alma was saying. "Back any minute now, I know. I'm ready for him." She turned and looked Mama full in the face. "I'm ready for him," she said again, her voice as calm and familiar as Mama's. "I'm ready for him." "Yes," Mama said. "I see, honey, you are." "We both are. We'll just sit here a while and wait for him." She kept her face pressed close, not looking away from Aunt Alma's eyes, as if only her presence was keeping Alma attached to the earth. One of the girls started whimpering over by the garden. I looked back, unable to resist the notion that everyone had gone crazy. Women all over Greenville County were going to smash stuff and then sit down to wait for Armageddon or sunrise or something.
It sounded like a good idea to me.
Bone, get away from there.
It was Uncle Earl's whisper. He was standing well back over near the stand of pines where the drive turned, his black hair gleaming in the sunlight, and an expression on his face of almost comical nervousness.
Come on, girl. Get back in the car and let your mama handle this.
His hands were flat on his thighs, and his jaw was set. He looked scared. Deathly scared. I'm gonna cut his throat, Aunt Alma said in the most reasonable voice imaginable. I got the knife for it.
Where is that? Mama asked her.
In my pocket. Aunt Alma's hands came down, patted the skirt of her dress. Her right hand slipped into a pocket I hadn't noticed before and came out with a razor. The straight edge closed into the handle. She flicked her wrist, and it swung open, the blade shining in the sunlight. She brought her left hand up and laid the blade on her palm, looking down at it like it was beautiful.
Oh, that'll do it, Mama said,
her voice still soft and matter-of-fact. She looked back over at me.
Bone, girl, go inside and get your aunt a glass of tea, why don't you?
Her eyes tracked past me to Uncle Earl, and she shook her head slightly. He nodded and started backing away toward the pines.
We should get you cleaned up a little, Alma.
You look like you got caught in a storm.
She gave a soft little laugh and gently pulled at her sister's arms. Alma shuddered and hunched over the razor. Mama went still, her face carefully empty. I stared at them. They seemed more alike than ever. Aunt Alma was a good 10 years older than Mama and maybe 20 pounds heavier, but she had the same strong features, cheekbones standing out like hammer hooks under eyes sunken and shadowed. Their hair was the same texture, dry and fine, though Mama's was more blonde for the rinse she used on it, and flattened out a little from the hairnet she had to wear at work. Aunt Alma's hair had a reddish sheen, peculiar to all the women on her side of the family. It was their necks, though, that were identical. Rigid cords of tendons standing out so that the little hollow where the collarbones met looked even deeper and more pronounced. The skin was the same, work roughened and red-tinged under the tan, though Aunt Alma wore no makeup, and Mama's was streaked with sweat. Family they were, obviously related, clearly sisters. When I swallowed loud, they both turned to me with the same gesture and the same expression.
Ain't you gonna do what I asked?
Mama prodded, just as if Aunt Alma wasn't sitting there covered in her own blood. Alma stirred, lifted her head, and looked over at me. I couldn't see where to put my feet.
Girl children,
Aunt Alma sighed.
Dreamers, always standing around, sucking on their teeth.
It's a fact, Mama agreed, and shook her head in resignation. I wanted to laugh, but instead I flushed in embarrassment. How old was I going to have to be before they stopped talking about me like that? I took a breath and stepped over the shattered pieces of flower pots, past the broken records, and up the steps. There was more rubble in the doorway, propping the screen door half open. The kitchen chairs had been smashed and the table overturned, the cabinets emptied and everything all over the floor. I picked my way across to the refrigerator, surprised that it wasn't standing open, more surprised to find that the contents were intact, and there was ice in the freezer. There was a gallon jug of tea ready-made. I turned back toward the porch, seeing Mama and Aunt Alma still sitting together on the steps.
You want a glass of tea, too, Mama?
I asked slowly.
Yes, honey, that would be nice.
She put her arm all the way across Aunt Alma's shoulders and hugged her close.
Your aunt and I just want to sit here a while before we start cleaning all this up.
I want another baby,
Aunt Alma was saying in a slurred tone. We had her in Patsy Ruth's bed, bundled in blankets with bandages on her hands. Alma's big old bed was broken in half.
though we couldn't figure out how she had managed to smash that oak headboard so completely. She lay there murmuring softly, groggy from the toddy Mama had made for her with whiskey, hot water, honey, and lemon.
I told him that. Told him I wanted another little girl. Told him it wasn't gonna be all right until I had another baby.
She paused. She still had the razor in her hand, closed now but gripped too tight to get away from her. We'd cleaned up a good bit, got the kids off to Aunt Raylene's, and made sure Uncle Wade wouldn't be coming home until someone went to get him. We hadn't done anything with the yard. Just picked up most of the broken glass and ripped clothes off the floor, put the kitchen back together, more or less, and cleaned and bandaged Aunt Alma. None of the kids had been hurt, just scared to death. The only casualty was one of the puppies, whose neck had been broken when something or someone fell on him. Gray and Garvey had showed up just before sundown to work on the yard a little and help round with the various animals. Mama wouldn't let them come in the house. I watched them for a while as they wandered around, shaking their heads and exclaiming in awe over how much destruction Aunt Alma had managed to do. Mama had stayed right beside Alma, keeping her hands on her, steadying and quieting her, and keeping between me and that razor that never left Aunt Alma's hand. She talked as if nothing had happened, and in fact most of it was about me, about how slow I answered, how daydreamy I was, how much I looked like my great-aunt Malvina. I had been surprised to hear all that, more surprised when she said I would stay here with Alma, give her a hand now that spring was warming up.
"You need some help around this place, Alma," Mama told her. "You'll like having Bone around. Maybe you can even get her to sing for you now and then."
My mouth had fallen open, and I had stood transfixed, as close to the bed as I dared. Did she mean that? Did Mama think I was reliable? Did I look like my great-aunt Malvina? Did she really think I could sing? Aunt Alma barely acknowledged what Mama said, just went on with her complaints about Uncle Wade.
I said, "Give me a baby, Wade. Just give me a baby."
She tried to sit up, and Mama leaned over to soothe her, climbing in bed with her.
"You know what he said to me? You know what he said to me?" Alma asked, hanging on to Mama with one desperate hand.
She didn't wait for an answer. She took hold of the blanket in her fist, shook it, and hissed the answer between her teeth.
"Said, what you want ain't what I want. He said, you old and ugly and fat as a cow, crazy as a cow eating too much weed, and you smell like a cow been lying in spoiled milk. Said, I wouldn't touch you even if you took a bath in whiskey tonic and put a bag over your head. He laughed at me. Then he walked right out of here."
She lay back limply. There were tears on her face, and her lips had flattened back against her teeth. She shook her head slowly back and forth.
"All this time, taking care of him, loving him, giving him children and meals and clean clothes and loving him, and him to talk to me that way."
She cried deep, broken sobs.
"And Annie," she wailed.
Mama gathered Aunt Alma up like a little girl, rocked her back and forth while she cried. It didn't last long. In the silence that followed, the two of them murmured a little, something I couldn't hear clearly. It sounded like Mama said something about Uncle Wade being a loving man, that Aunt Alma loved him. Then Aunt Alma's voice came out loud and strong again.
"Oh, but that's why I got to cut his throat," she said plainly. "If I didn't love the son of a bitch, I'd let him live forever."
"Woman takes it in her head to go crazy. You just might as well stand back."
Uncle Earl was joking to Gray and Garvey out on the porch in the dark, the three of them standing close together, smoking and sharing a beer. They'd wanted to get in the house so bad, Mama had finally let them move some of the broken furniture, insisting they do it quietly so that Alma could sleep.
"Oh, women," Garvey grunted. "They're not that hard to handle." "You think?" Uncle Earl laughed. "I'm telling you, boy, you never can predict what a woman might not do. You remember that little girl from Nashville I brought around 2 summers ago? Sweet little thing, not any bigger than Bone, and all pasty-faced, blonde, and giggly.
tiny, yeah.
Gray almost laughed. He sounded like he remembered her well.
She was so shy nobody got to know her.
Well, that little thing,
Uncle Earl drawled.
That little thing just about cut my balls off with a pair of scissors one night. Got me by the short hairs and tried as hard as she could. If I hadn't been twice her weight and six times as scared, she'd have left me a eunuch.
He laughed like the idea still made him nervous.
I'm telling you, women are dangerous. You need to keep it in mind.
I leaned my face against the screen door. It creaked slightly, and they all looked over toward me. I must have been silhouetted against the kitchen light like some ghostly night creature, because they all jumped. Earl's face went stiff.
Bone, he said, you better get back in there with your mama. She might need your help.
Gray stood there quietly beside Earl, his hand still holding a beer can. I waited a minute, looking at him, remembering when he swore he would never forget what we had done. He lifted the beer can, drank deeply. He looked so proud to be standing on that porch drinking with Uncle Earl.
Didn't you hear, Earl?
Garvey's tone was harsh. I looked at him directly and snorted.
Little boy pretending to be a man didn't scare me.
But I backed into the kitchen anyway. I remembered that Nashville girl perfectly well. She had been so shy she stuttered whenever she tried to answer a question, and she was terrified of bugs of any kind. We'd teased her until she cried and went running to Earl like he was her father, not her supposed-to-be husband. She hadn't looked to me like the kind that could do any damage at all, or even think about it. Not like Aunt Alma, who was, after all, a boatwright, and dangerous as any man even when she wasn't crazy. But you can't tell with women, I thought. I looked down at my hands in the dim light of the lamp Mama had set up on the counter near the sink. My hands were small, the tendons blue and fine under pale skin, like Alma's and Mama's. We all had small hands. I looked back down the hall to the bedroom. I could just see the smashed and tumbled bed frame. No, I thought. You just can't tell with women.
Might be, you can't even tell with girls.
I never realized before how much you look like Alma. It was so late, it was almost morning. Mama's voice came out of the darkness from the direction of the doorway. But when we were sitting on those steps together, and you were standing in the yard, I saw it so clear. I saw what you're gonna look like when you're full grown. You're gonna be as pretty as Alma was when she was a girl. Prettier than you can imagine. I said nothing. I was wrapped in a blanket, sitting on little Earl's mattress up against the wall where we had dragged it earlier in the evening. Aunt Alma had finally gone to sleep, and Mama had decided it was safe for us to try to get some rest. But for an hour, she had been sitting propped up on her pillow, smoking, and I had been staring into the dark, listening to the cows move around in the pasture near the house. Mama shifted restlessly, turning toward me.
Bone, she said softly. What is it you think about all the time?
Nothing much. I looked at the cigarette's burning tip. My eyes had adjusted to the dark so that I could make out the shape of her body, her shoulders pushed up on the pile of old pillows, her arms lying on top of the blanket. Nothing I could explain.
You're always so quiet, always watching.
Mama's voice was soft and sounded more relaxed than I had heard in a long time.
I can tell when you're mad, you know.
You get that storm cloud look on your face. And you've had that enough lately. She shifted in her blanket, put the cigarette out in a saucer on the floor.
The thing is, if you're not mad, I can't tell what's happening inside you. You never look happy. You look like you're waiting. What are you waiting for, Bone?
For you to go back to Daddy Glenn, I thought, and hugged my blanket tighter around my shoulders.
Bone?
I touched the backs of my fingers to my throat, felt the warmth there, the pulse in the hollow beneath my chin.
Bone? You're not asleep?
No.
You don't want to talk to me?
My fingers were wet, my chin the edge of the blanket.
I remembered Aunt Alma's direct look this afternoon when she'd talked about loving Wade,
about wanting to kill him. I didn't understand that kind of love.
I didn't understand anything. I swallowed and tried not to make a sound.
You're still mad at me, aren't you?
Mama sounded like she wanted to cry. I bent forward and pressed my mouth to the blanket edge.
Not gonna tell me anything?
One of the cows moaned out in the dark pasture. I swallowed again.
I'm waiting for you to go home, I said.
I'm waiting for you to go back to Daddy Glenn.
There was a long silence. You think I'm going to?
Mama whispered finally.
Uh-huh, I said. Oh, Bone.
She sat up, took another cigarette out, and lit it with a match. In the glow, I saw her cheeks pale and shiny.
You want to come over here and sit by me?
No. I didn't move. I felt as if I had become hypersensitive, as if I could hear everything. The cow's hooves in the damp grass, the dew slipping off the porch eaves. Mama's heart pounding with fear.
Bone, I couldn't stand it if you hated me, she said.
I couldn't hate you, I told her. Mama, I couldn't hate you.
But you're sure I'm gonna go back to him?
Uh-huh. I coughed and cleared my throat.
Oh, God, Bone, I can't just go back. I can't have you hating me.
I ain't never gonna hate you. I took a deep breath and made myself speak with no intonation at all. I know you love him. I know you need him. And he's good to you. He's good to Reese.
He just... I thought a minute.
I don't know.
We were quiet for a while.
When Mama spoke, she sounded almost like a girl, unsure of herself and scared.
Maybe he needs to talk to somebody. Raylene said maybe he needed a doctor.
I wiped my face and shrugged. Now I felt tired, aching tired. So deeply tired it was hard to pull air all the way down into my lungs. Maybe, I said.
I won't go back until I know you're gonna be safe.
Mama's voice was determined.
I promise you, Bone.
I won't go back. The words were so quiet, so flat. They didn't seem to have come out of me. But once they were said, some energy seemed to come back to me.
I wouldn't make you, honey.
No, I know. It's not that, Mama. I know you wouldn't. I sat up, rocked my head forward, and heard my neck bones make an odd cracking sound as the muscles stopped straining. When I spoke this time, my voice was strong, the words clear. I know you'll go back, Mama, and maybe you should. I don't know what's right for you, just what I have to do. I can't go back to live with Daddy Glenn. I won't. I could go stay with Aunt Carr for a while, or move in with Raylene. I think she'd be glad to keep me. But no matter what you decide, when you go back to Daddy Glenn, I can't go with you.
Bone!
Mama got up from her mattress so fast I felt myself push back against the wall nervously. Her hands came down on my shoulders, squeezed gently.
What are you saying to me?
She asked. I could see her face. The moon must have risen. In the dim reflected light from outside, her cheekbones and shadowy eyes were ghostly. She was afraid. I love you, I said. But I can't think of anything else to do. She gripped me hard. I could feel her fingernails biting in, the intensity of her fear. She shook her head and pulled me to her neck.
Oh, God, what have I done?
She cried.
Mama, don't, I said gently.
Please. She let go of me, but still knelt there close. I wondered if she could see me as clearly as I could see her. If so, what was she seeing in my face? A rain began to fall outside. With no wind, it came down in a sweet, sprinkling whisper, little drops flicking through the tender new growth on the trees and bushes. Mama put her palms flat against her eyes.
All right, she said. All right.
I swallowed. I wanted to reach for her, to say I was sorry, to say that I hadn't meant it, that I would go back with her. But I didn't move. After a minute, she got up and went back to her pallet. She didn't smoke anymore. She pulled her blanket up and lay still. So quiet she might have been asleep as soon as she lay down. Much later, in the early dawn with the blanket pulled over my head, I heard Mama start crying.
trying hard not to make a sound and almost succeeding. Only her breath catching every little while gave her away. My own eyes were dry. I didn't feel like I was going to cry. I didn't feel like I was ever going to cry again. Chapter 20. It was peaceful out at Aunt Alma's. The spring ripened until the yard and surrounding woods were lush green and full of singing birds. The three surviving puppies ran in stumbling leaps and falls, rolling over each other and digging between their mama's titties. The clothes scattered across the yard had to have the dirt shaken out before they could be washed. The washer itself worked pretty good, though Earl could not figure out how to fix the wringer. I hung the soggy clothes out on a line that Gray put up between the porch and the black walnut tree, though none of them came truly clean, and some of them Mama set aside as garbage. I made a big pile off the porch of the things that were broken beyond repair, and Uncle Earl hauled it away. Alma came back to herself, slowly. She didn't want to talk much, but then neither did I. Mama came out every afternoon for a while, then every other day, and finally every few days. She'd bring Alma some little treat, some sweet corn succotash or chow chow and biscuits, or once even a little blackberry cobbler. For me, she brought books, paperbacks she traded for down at the book exchange, or magazines she got from the women she worked with over at the Stevens Mill. One afternoon, Alma passed her the razor she'd been keeping in her apron pocket. "You'll feel better if you take this away," she said to Mama. They both looked at the deadly thing. "You sure you don't still need it?" Mama ran her fingers over the smooth, polished handle and the dull outside edge. "If it makes you feel better, you should just keep it." "No." Aunt Alma sighed and combed through her hair restlessly with her fingers. It had gone full gray in the week since she'd wrecked the house, and she had cut it off short with that razor the afternoon before. "I ain't got the urge no more. I still don't want to see Wade yet, but I ain't thinking about cutting his throat no more either." "It's just as well," Mama told her. "Leave him alive to suffer. He's been staying over at Faye's, and Carr's been with him every minute. She says she don't dare go home again until she knows Wade's gonna be all right. But between his leg itching him and her nagging and whining at him, Wade looks like he's liable to shoot himself again any minute." They both smiled. Nobody said anything about me having to go to school out in the country. Mama had brought me a list of books to read and a note from my teacher, saying that so long as I wasn't gone more than a month, everything could be made up. I wondered what Mama had told her, but I didn't ask. It was such a relief not to have to sit in those boring classes, to be able to read as much as I wanted, sit up late with Alma, and get up when I felt like it. Mama and I were being a little easier with each other, but still tender. I heard from Reese that Mama had seen Daddy Glenn a couple of times, and they were talking again. I tried not to worry about the future, not to think too much about anything. I worked in Alma's garden, saving what I could of her herbs and flowers, and put in some seedlings and cuttings Raylene brought by. The days were a gift, long and warm, the nights quiet and cool. I slept dreamlessly and woke up at peace. The afternoon Daddy Glenn showed up, Alma was out in the garden by herself, putting in the tomato seedlings Raylene had brought over the day before. I planned to go off on a picnic, had packed a cloth bag with a bottle of tea and lemons, and was spreading bread with peanut butter to go with it. The puppies had gotten in the kitchen and were tumbling over themselves to beg me for treats. I gave them each 1 teaspoon of peanut butter and dragged them out on the porch to watch them chew and yawn and try to lick the tops of their mouths. I was giggling at them when a Ford pulled up into the yard and Daddy Glenn climbed out. He looked the same, though there was a scar over his left eye and he seemed to limp slightly as he walked toward the porch. He wore his work clothes, khaki trousers and white shirt with the sleeves rolled up to his elbows. His brown shoes were scuffed and dusty. There was a little beard showing, as if he had shaved the night before and not this morning. I stood and watched as he came up the steps, not knowing what to do.
"Bone," he said.
His voice was hoarse and deep.
I wondered if Aunt Alma heard it out in the garden behind the house. His eyes looked bright and intent, his jaw tense.
"Your mama ain't here, is she?"
he asked. I shook my head no. I put my hands behind my back and clasped them tightly. He stepped up on the porch and looked me over, up and down, and back up to my face. His lips thinned out.
"You're getting bigger," he said. "Gonna be ready to start dating boys any day now. Getting married, maybe. Starting your own family."
He spat to the side.
"Breaking some man's heart just 'cause you can."
I licked my lips, unclasped my hands. "I'll get you something to drink," I said. I pushed through the screen door as fast as I could, but he was right behind me, his hand pulling my fingers off the little latch.
"You do that," he said.
He looked at the table where the peanut butter jar still stood with the lid off.
"Making yourself a sandwich? Make me one."
I didn't know what to do. Get him a glass of tea, make him a sandwich, keep my head down and hope that Aunt Alma would come back in? I thought of her and her bandaged hands, her sore back and thin neck. I looked in Daddy Glenn's eyes again and was too afraid to move.
"Don't act like that. You ain't got no reason to be afraid of me."
He moved toward me.
"I talked to Annie, you know. She's gonna come back.
She promised.
Just needs a little time. Time to make it up to you."
I saw his fingers curl up and loosen again. He flung his huge hands out to the side and shook his head, laughing.
"That woman loves you more than I can understand. Needs time to work things out with you."
He sneered the words.
"Time with you. My sweet Jesus."
He shrugged his shoulders, put his hands on his hips, and put his face close to mine.
"You're gonna have to tell her it's all right," he said. "You're gonna have to tell her you want us all to be together again."
He paused, looking at me intently. My stomach hurt. I looked down. My sweaty fingers were rolled into fists. "No," I whispered. "I don't want to live with you no more. Mama can go home to you. I told her she could, but I can't. I won't."
"Won't?"
He touched my cheek. I looked up at him.
"You won't live with me?"
His eyes were hard blue rocks, his mouth an angry line.
"You're not even 13 years old, girl. You don't say what you do. I'm your daddy. I say what you do."
"No," I said it quietly. My throat was so tight, it was hard to say anything. I saw him rock back away from me, close his eyes, push his hands together in front of his body as if he were about to pray. He shook his head. "No," I said again.
"I'm trying to be reasonable with you, girl. I want you to talk to your mama. I want you to stop this nonsense before you make me really mad."
His clasped hands shook. He opened his eyes.
"No,"
I said it louder.
"I'd rather die than go back to living with you." "You would."
His lips curled into a mean smile.
"I bet you would,"
he said in a whisper. There was a long, quiet moment. I could hear my heartbeat.
"Make me that sandwich,"
he said,
"and we'll talk."
I stood unmoving, watching his face and hands. "No, I don't want to talk. I want you to leave." He shook his head and went on smiling. "I'll tell Mama," I said desperately. "I'll tell her." His hands came up and grabbed my shoulders, shook me.
"You don't want to make your daddy a sandwich?"
His voice grated with rage.
"You don't want to do nothing for me?"
Another shake. He lifted me so that my feet came off the floor. My mouth opened. I wanted to scream, but nothing came out. I remembered all the times he had lifted me like that before. Lifted me, shaken me, then pulled me to his chest. Held me against him and run his hands over me. Moaned while his fingers gouged at me. I had always been afraid to scream. Afraid to fight. I had always felt like it was my fault, but now it didn't matter. I didn't care anymore what might happen. I wouldn't hold still anymore. I tried to wiggle free, and he laughed. He dropped me. I staggered back against the table.
"You're the one. You're the reason. She loves me, I know it, but it's you. You're the one gets in the way. You make me crazy, and you make her ashamed. Ashamed of you, and ashamed of loving me.
It ain't right. It ain't right her leaving me because of you. It ain't right.
His voice got harder, hoarser but no louder, and it was the quiet that terrified me. It reminded me of Alma with the razor in her hand and madness in her eyes. Daddy Glenn's eyes were just as crazy, more crazy. There was pain in them, deep pain, yes. But hate was the thing that made them burn. Suddenly his fist shot out like it was on a spring. His knuckles raked the side of my chin, and I fell back on the table.
You can't destroy me so easy, he said. Annie's gonna come back, she told me. She just needs a little time. I can understand that after everything that's happened.
He leaned toward me, one hand extended.
But if she wasn't gonna come back to me, I'd kill you. You know that? I'd break your neck.
His hand touched the side of my face, my ear, my neck, slid down my front, the slight swells of my breasts. His blue eyes trailed down my body.
Ah,
Daddy Glenn moaned. He pulled me to his chest, holding me tight, breathing hard.
There was blood in my mouth and a roar in my head. I went hard, stiff, metal hard as the butter knife I found I had grabbed without thinking. He kissed me wetly, his teeth grinding into my mouth. I jerked that knife up and rammed it into his side hard as I could. It slid along his belt, smearing peanut butter on his shirt, not even tearing the material, but hurting him anyway, I could tell. Damn you!
He threw me away from him so that my back hit the counter and I slipped down, falling as he came toward me, kicking at me. His boot hit me solidly in the shoulder. His arm came down, caught my right wrist, and jerked hard, pulling me up sharply, then dropped me. Something gave, crunching audibly, while a wave of sickening heat followed, and my arm flopped uselessly under my body.
You little cunt!
He kicked again, and his boot slipped along the side of my head, cutting my ear so that blood gushed. Then that boot thudded into my belly, and I rolled sideways, retching bile down my right arm.
You!
He cursed, and it echoed in my head.
You goddamn little bastard!
You! I told him. Mama's never gonna go back to you. I won't let her. I hate you.
I've prayed for you to die.
He hissed between set white teeth. His hand caught the front of my blouse and dug into the material.
Just die and leave us alone. If it hadn't been for you, I'd have been all right. Everything would have been all right.
He sobbed and dragged me forward so that I was up on my knees, swaying in his grip until my blouse tore, and I fell back under him. He grabbed for me again, and something hit me hard between the legs. I screamed. His boot or his leg? He dropped down on top of me.
You're not going anywhere,
he laughed.
You think you're so grown up? You think you're so big and bad saying no to me? Let's see how big you are, how grown.
His hand spread what was left of my blouse and ripped at the zipper on my pants, pulling them down my thighs as my left hand groped to hold them. I tried to kick, but I was pinned. Tears were streaming down my face, but I wasn't crying. I was cursing him.
Damn you! Damn you! Damn you! God will damn you!
He reached with one hand to shove my pants down almost to my ankles, and with the other to open his breeches.
You'll shut up. I'll shut you up. I'll teach you!
He ripped my panties off me like they were paper. Then he jerked me up a little and spread my legs.
You fucker!
I punched up at him with my almost useless right arm.
You little cunt. I should have done this a long time ago. You've always wanted it. Don't tell me you don't.
His knee pushed my legs further apart, and his big hand leisurely smashed the side of my face. He laughed then, as if he liked the feel of my blood on his fist, and hit me again. I opened my mouth to scream, and his hand closed around on my throat.
I'll give you what you really want,
he said, and his whole weight came down hard. My scream was gaspy and low around his hand on my throat. He fumbled with his fingers between his legs, opened me, and then reared back slightly, looking down into my face with his burning eyes.
Now, he said, and slammed his body forward from his knees. You'll learn.
His words came in short, angry bursts.
You'll never mouth off to me again. You'll keep your mouth shut. You'll do as you're told. You'll tell Annie what I want you to tell her.
I gagged. He rocked in and ground down, flexing and thrusting his hips.
I felt like he was tearing me apart, my ass slapping against the floor with every thrust, burning and tearing and bruising. God! I screamed with all the strength I had. Not loud enough.